This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. The United States today signed a history-making peace agreement with the Taliban in Qatar. It is aimed at ending nearly two decades of bloodshed in Afghanistan. The AP's Julie Walker has a report.
Under the deal signed in Doha, the U.S. draws down its forces from 13,000 to 8,600 in the next 3 to 4 months and pulls out the remaining forces in 14 months, depending on the Taliban meeting their commitments to prevent terrorism. If they don't, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says,
President Trump and his team will not hesitate to do what we must do to protect American lives.
Meanwhile, in Afghanistan, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper told U.S. troops their sacrifice is what led to this historic deal.
This is the best chance Afghanistan has had in 19 years to achieve peace.
More than 2,400 U.S. troops have been killed during the conflict. I'm Julie Walker.
Defense Secretary Mark Esper in Afghanistan spoke about the force reduction.
As we draw down our forces, the United States and our international partners remain fully committed to our relationship with the government of Afghanistan and its security forces. We will continue to provide them support as necessary to assist in their ability to defend the people of Afghanistan.
Refugees and migrants crowded Turkey's border with Greece today as they try to escape deadly airstrikes by government forces in Syria by fleeing to Europe. There were scuffles with Greek border guards, including the use of tear gas. The European Union has warned the fighting in northern Syria could escalate into open war between Turkish and Russian-backed Syrian forces. 33 Turkish soldiers in Syria were killed in airstrikes this week. Fitting an increasing global pattern, sources say the United States is postponing a meeting of Southeast Asian leaders which it planned to host on March 14th. President Trump had invited the ASEAN nations to meet in Las Vegas, then coronavirus fears stepped into the picture. Mr. Trump failed to attend a summit with the group in Bangkok in November. More news at voanews.com. From Washington, this is VOA News. France has become the latest country to ban large crowds in response to the new coronavirus. The AP's Zaria Shackley has that story.
The cancellation of large gatherings in confined spaces was announced by France's health minister after special government meetings. The health minister said public gatherings are being banned completely in the Oise region north of Paris that has seen a cluster of cases and in a town in the Alps that has also seen infections. He also added as of Saturday, France has registered a total of 73 cases, up from 57 on Friday. Of those, 2 have died and 12 have recovered. I'm Zaria Shackley.
Australia's health minister Greg Hunt has announced new virus travel rules for people who have been in Iran.
Australian citizens and permanent residents and their immediate family from the 1st of March who have travelled to Iran will be required to self-isolate, again consistent with the decision taken in relation to mainland China.
There was a positive coronavirus note today from the World Health Organization. WHO Director Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
We do not see evidence as yet that the virus is spreading freely in communities. As long as that's the case, we still have a chance of containing this virus. If robust action is taken to detect cases early, isolate and care for patients, and trace contacts.
President Trump has scheduled a coronavirus news conference for next hour. He's been heavily criticized for downplaying the COVID-19 infection. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is warning the coronavirus could play havoc with the supply of vital drug supplies. From China, AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
China is the second largest drug producer for the United States, so federal regulators checked for supply chain disruptions. They've identified 20 drugs produced or sourced exclusively from China, which could run short. The FDA is not naming the drugs to prevent panic buying, and regulators are emphasizing that alternative medicines are available. China's a major producer of antibiotics for the U.S. market, as well as heart disease medications. It also makes medical devices, although no shortages have yet been announced. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Voters in South Carolina are casting ballots today in a Democratic Party presidential primary, providing a dramatic run-up to next week's Super Tuesday marathon of balloting in 14 states. More news at voanews.com online. There is also a mobile app. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
As I'm driving through Bissau, the day is completely normal, just like a normal day. Yes, we have two self-sworn presidents. It's something that is not original. I'm passing by the big market, the Bandi market, and people are dealing their days as usual. But the day is quiet as usual in Bissau. It's a normal Saturday.
Calm returns to Guinea-Bissau after the installation of two people as president.
Of course, they did technically admit that it was not right because they said, well, mistakes have been done. But, I mean, that's big. So, but they nevertheless dropped the charges and also against the journalists and reopened the media house.
The Gambian government drops charges against journalists while lifting the suspension of two radio stations.
I don't think I should spend my days, every second of my life, recalling people that I won the election. I said I was vocal. I have been vocal on it, and I still say that I won the elections. I have no deal whatsoever with the government. I would like to be very clear on that.
And Maurice Kamto, a Cameroonian opposition leader, maintains he is the legitimate winner of last year's presidential vote. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Calm has returned to Guinea-Bissau after two rivals swore themselves in as president. Media specialist Elizabeth Marian Gomez-Sarr says citizens are going about their daily routines unperturbed by the ongoing political crisis. Umaro Sissoko Embalo was declared the winner of last year's presidential poll after defeating Domingo Simaeus Pereira from the majority PAIGC party. Embalo saw himself in on Thursday, but using its majority in parliament, the PAIGC also swore in Cipriano Kasama as interim president Friday. To learn more about the political situation, I reached Elizabeth Marian Gomez-Sarr, a media specialist in the Guinea-Bissau capital, Bissau.
Yeah, as I'm driving through Bissau, the day is completely normal, just like a normal day. Yes, we have two self-sworn presidents. It's something that is not original. I'm passing by the big market, the Bandi market, and people are dealing their days as usual. There's a Portuguese television doing a report, but the day is quiet as usual in Bissau. It's a normal Saturday.
But I also understand that there was a little demonstration and the police surrounded one of the candidates who swore himself in. So how are people reacting to this after hearing that you have two presidents?
Yeah, we heard news yesterday that the police and the military were around the national parliament, the government palace, the judicial palace. But it's not something that I can confirm it because I wasn't there. And people were a little bit apprehensive yesterday with the news and cautioning each other to stay at home and be calm. But right now, it's just a regular day. The first candidate that sworn himself in 2 days ago, they said it should be a symbolic sworn where the incoming was there, but not the president of the Supreme Judicial Court. Didn't have any members of the international community. It was the incumbent, the second person in the parliament who sworn him in, and also a few members of their parties. Well, many members of their party, to say. And the day after, he resigned the current government. While the current government, on the day that he was sworn, he was issuing communicates saying that it was a coup d'etat because the situation or there was an issue in the courts and they need to wait for the Supreme Court to rule in. And we still don't have that from the Supreme Court. And since that happened, the president of the parliament decided that he was going to swear himself too as president since the incumbent left the palace. So we have the situation, and since it seems like, and I say it seems like because that's what it seems like Sisoko has on his side the military and the security forces, so they decided to go to the judicial part, judicial palace where the Supreme Court is, and the government palace.
So, Elizabeth, which of the two leaders will be considered the legitimate president of Guinea-Bissau?
We are still to hear the ruling of the Supreme Court, that I hope they will hear it next week, because they issued a mandate to the National Committee for Elections, where they're supposed to have a new... It's not a recount, but they should recheck all the resumes from the voting booths. And when they did it, they found some anomalies. So we're still waiting for the final result from that, and then the ruling from the Supreme Court.
Some people are suggesting that perhaps ECOWAS should come in and try to resolve the situation, since the country could be plunged into yet another political crisis. What do you think, or how are people reacting to this?
Well, the ECOWAS situation, I'm not sure if it would be the ideal, just because our constitutional laws, our presidential system is different from the rest of the countries in ECOWAS besides Cape Verde. And most of the times, the solution that they bring is not the one that is according to our constitution. So we're just going to continue forgetting our constitution and going above the law. And that should not continue to happen in Guinea-Bissau. Since the incumbent left the palace and we don't have the decision from the presidential court or the Supreme Court, what we should have, in fact, is the president of the parliament to assume as the interim president, okay? He swore himself yesterday, but still we need him to be in the presidential palace. But the other candidate is already there.
What is the next step forward? How do you resolve this situation where you have two presidents in the country? How do you resolve it?
I'm not sure if you'll... Well, the practical next step should be to hear what the Supreme Court has to say, and then we'll move from there. That's the next step, basically. Following that, it will always depend on what the Supreme Court had to say.
Elizabeth Miriam Gomez-Sai is a Guinea-Bissau media specialist. She spoke with me from Bissau. The Gambian government announced it was dropping charges against two radio journalists. They were detained after covering a protest by a group demanding President Adama Barrow steps down. The government also lifted the suspension of two radio stations for covering the protest. At a meeting with government officials, the press union demanded an apology and compensation for the radio stations and the journalists. The government has so far declined to do so. To learn more about the meeting, I read Mustafa Dabo, vice president of the Gambian Press Union.
Gambia Press Union went into the meeting with some concerns. It was brokered by the National Human Rights Commission. So we went there because you will remember four journalists were arrested and charged with incitement. They were never brought before the court of law, but the charges were there. And then two radio stations were also closed. So we went into the negotiation with few demands, which was acknowledgement of wrong, by the government that the actions were illegal, and also a compensation for the closure of these radio stations because they were out of business for about a month. But these two were not accepted by the government. Of course, they did technically admit that it was not right because they said, well, mistakes have been done. But, I mean, that's big. So, but they nevertheless dropped the charges and also against the journalists and reopened the media houses.
As Mustafa, some people expressed concern that the action taken by the government was over the top and that it needs to take responsibility for its actions since the actions violated the constitution, which guaranteed free speech, which protects journalists for doing their job.
Yeah, absolutely, and we are in that agreement, and that's the reason why we want to take the remaining demands we have to the court, such that the court can declare the actions of the government illegal and also can offer some form of remedy, I mean, or compensation, if you like, to the media houses that were closed down. Because not doing that is a huge risk. I mean, given the kind of history this country has had, there is always a temptation to pull the country back to that path. And, you know, there is a deterrent effect, if you like, with such actions like suing the government. I mean, given that we all know that the actions were illegal. I mean, the authorization clearly should have been made by our regulatory authority here, we call PURA, Public Utility Regulatory Authority. They are the institution that is supposed to advise the minister, and the minister is the one who has the authority to revoke the license.
Did the organization speak with the government about giving them the time for them to consider your request to have them compensate these radio stations, or perhaps you're going straight to the court because they refused to do so?
Our position was, when we left that place, our position was to continue the negotiation and see what their position is on it. For now, I mean, as far as we were concerned, when we were having a discussion, I mean, they call it a negotiation. We didn't consider it a negotiation because we thought that only one of our demands, the reopening of a radio station, is their obligation. They should do that. You close it illegally. You didn't consult us. So if you're going to reopen it, that's not our issue. I mean, our issue was, the charges, of course, we thought there are no charges. We thought even if they took those journalists to court, they wouldn't be able to nail them on those charges because they didn't do anything wrong. So, I mean, what basically they did was undo their own mess. So the other two remaining, which is the cost, what they cost these two media houses, was what our concerns were about. And we are hopeful that probably at some point they will listen. But these two things are being done currently. There is negotiation and there is a process also being undertaken to seek alternatives at the court.
What has been the stance of the government regarding the compensation for the two radio stations? And why did they decide to drop the charges without compensating the journalists for what some people are saying are undue, unnecessary pressure and violating their rights and emotional distress as a result of the action taken by the government?
Well, I mean, for the compensation, they haven't even given a chance to the media to present what we consider to be a reasonable amount to be paid to these journalists. And, I mean, a closure for a month is a lot in the business of a radio station. And also, I mean, it causes some crisis of confidence. Like, for instance, if people know your radio is a target and it can be closed down at any point, advertisers would certainly not come. So that there is a deterrent that we thought is important to, that's why we're seeking this compensation. So it's either going to be done voluntarily or it will be probably granted by the courts. We hope that the courts do. I mean, we are hopeful that the position we hold, it has some advantages to ensure that we have some success in the courts.
Mustafa Dabo is the vice president of the Gambian Press Union. He spoke with me from the capital, Banjul. Mm.
Maurice Kamto, the leader of the opposition Cameroonian Renaissance Movement, says his party is vindicated for boycotting recent legislative and local elections. This after opposition and civil society groups rejected the outcome of the polls, saying they were fraught with irregularities and rigging. Kamto was recently released from jail after claiming he won the last presidential election. He was recently in Washington, D.C. to meet Cameroonians in the diaspora to talk to them about the current situation facing the country. He sat down with me to talk about the impact of the decision to boycott the recent legislative and local elections.
Cameroon is facing a terrible situation with the civil war ongoing in the English-speaking part of the country, northwest and southwest. And we've been submitting proposals to the government for the past 3 years, and nothing has happened yet. It looks like some people in the government think they will win the war militarily. We don't believe in that. And in any case, we think that at the end of the day, you need to sit around the table to find a political solution.
Some people that I spoke with from Cameroon saying that since you came out of prison, you appear to have stopped saying you won the presidential election. Why? And they are saying possibly, probably, you might have struck a deal with the government to keep quiet. Mm. Is that the case?
I heard that question this morning. This is the first time I listened to such a question, because I don't know how I should put it. But I don't think I should spend my days, every second of my life, recalling people that I won the election. I said I was vocal. I have been vocal on it, and I still say that I won the elections. I have no deal whatsoever with the government. I would like to be very clear on that.
All right. People have proposed a lot of recommendations in terms of how to resolve the Anglophone crisis at the moment. What is your take on the solution proposed by many that perhaps a two-state federation or a return to it could be a solution to the crisis? What is your take? What's your stance?
We are very supportive of federalism. Whether it will be two-state or something else will be discussed during the inclusive dialogue we are calling for.
But the government said, we've had dialogue, we've organized dialogue, we had all these people come in. So what other dialogue are you talking about?
No. I mean, the so-called dialogue, major dialogue, was masquerade. Masquerade because the government selected some few people to present them as stakeholders from the Anglophone side. And we all know that the armed groups were not represented in that dialogue. How could we reach a genuine solution without involving those who are in the field fighting for the reform or for secession? Some of them are clearly fighting for secession.
What do you make of people who are suggesting that the international community should put additional pressure on the government in Yaoundé to expedite action to embrace some of these solutions that you have espoused? What is your take?
I definitely share the view, because nothing serious is happening on the ground. Killings are increasing daily, day after day. And we see that the current government in Cameroon is not listening to anybody. You know, I was quoting some resolutions from the U.S. Congress, from the European Union Parliament, from Canada, and from the African Union. None of the recommendations contained in those resolutions were implemented by the government so far. So we do need additional pressure on Cameroonian government to tackle the situation seriously. We have not been able to resolve the crisis among ourselves as Cameroonians. So we do need some additional help from outside. Maybe we'll reach the solution we have been seeking for the past 3 years. As far as Anglophone crisis is concerned, and politically, for the past 7 years or so, concerning the post-electoral crisis.
Maurice Kamto is the leader of the opposition Cameroonian Renaissance Movement. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. Thank you. The World Health Organization is urging people not to give in to panic and fear about the global spread of the coronavirus epidemic, but to ward off the disease through effective personal hygiene. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Globally, coronavirus cases are skyrocketing, with most of the cases and deaths in China. However, the disease now is spreading faster in countries outside China. The rapid global acceleration of COVID-19 has prompted the World Health Organization to raise its risk assessment to very high at a global level. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus acknowledges this is a matter of great concern, but says there are things everyone can do to prevent themselves and others from becoming infected.
First, as we keep saying, clean your hands regularly with an alcohol-based hand rub or wash them with soap and water. Touching your face after touching contaminated surfaces or sick people is one of the ways the virus can be transmitted. By cleaning your hands, you can reduce your risk.
Indeed, health professionals agree this is one of the simplest and most effective ways of keeping this deadly virus at bay. Other recommendations include cleaning surfaces regularly with disinfectant, avoiding traveling with a fever or cough, staying home if you are sick, and eating and sleeping separately from your family. Tedros notes there is a potential for the spread of COVID-19 to develop into a global pandemic. Right now, though, he says what is seen is linked epidemics in several countries where it is still possible to trace most cases to known contacts or clusters of cases.
We do not see evidence as yet that the virus is spreading freely in communities. As long as that's the case, we still have a chance of containing this virus. If robust action is taken to detect cases early, isolate and care for patients, and trace contacts.
Tedros says work is progressing on vaccines and therapeutics. He says more than 20 vaccines are in development and several therapeutics are in clinical trials. First results are expected in a few weeks. However, the WHO chief cautions it is likely to be many months or longer before a viable vaccine or drug is available. So he says people should take control of their own health and follow WHO's guidance on ways to protect themselves from COVID-19. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Listen to a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week that include health officials urging governments to respond aggressively to the coronavirus. Join moderator Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington, panelist Kimberly Adams, correspondent for Marketplace, and Jonathan Broder, contributing editor at Newsweek, Saturday and Sunday.
Music Time in Africa. Hey everybody, I'm Heather Maxwell. I've got an exciting playlist of amazing tunes from Morocco, Ghana, Ethiopia, Benin, South Africa, Nigeria, Gambia, and Tanzania. You'll also meet Kenyan singer-songwriter Dan Aseda. He just released his new album, Benganology, and Bill Odidi gets him to talk about it and play a few fresh samples.
The kind of traditional classic
song of the week from Gabon is Yaya Yobe, a gorgeous tune by Chanel Lakinda. Kwame Ofori joins me to present that. And finally, my vintage tune is polyphonic music from the rainforests of Central African Republic. Don't miss it. Music Time in Africa, 1505 and 20500 Universal Time.
And you're listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Coalition of United Political Parties, or CUPP, a major Nigerian opposition group, has expressed concern that the government appears ill-prepared to implement measures to prevent the coronavirus from reaching the country. This, the party says, despite repeated warnings. It comes after the government confirmed the first case of the coronavirus. The government has so far assured citizens that it has the capacity to prevent the spread of the virus. For more reaction, I reach Ikenga Imu Ugujinyere, spokesperson for the opposition CUPP in the capital, Abuja.
We are not going to play politics with this because it has to do with the health of the nation and the health of every citizen of this great country and Africa at large. But first of all, you remember that we issued an alarm earlier on before where we told the president, do not wait for the coronavirus to come here before we start test running our readiness. Let's get ready, starting with immediate stoppage of all flights from highly infected countries of the world. And we told the president, the United States of America directed flights at a particular point to some airport so they can be able to contain and be able to check these people. How can, after spending so much, especially by the Ministry of Health, Lagos State Government and the Airport Authority, that the Italian man could slip through our screening point and get to Lagos since 25th of February? The man has been gallivanted all over Lagos State, going to a good state from what our investigation have shown, two times and coming back within this period.
Ikenga, are you saying that the government has not been proactive in its anticipation of this thing?
Yes, the government have not been proactive because starting with the Lagos State government that even told foreigners and Chinese to quarantine themselves. In national security, if 30 citizens need to die for the millions to live, it is allowed in international politics and safeguarding of the life of your people. How can you tell people that come from infected zones to quarantine themselves? This Italian man moved to a good state this time. He had a driver, he had a cook, he had somebody who cleaned his hotel room, he had somebody he bought something from, he had somebody who washed his plate. And this man has been with this virus in 3 days. And only for us to know yesterday that government is telling us that the man is infected and he's stable. What about other people that might have carried the disease? Their children have gone back to school. Some people are in the marketplace. We are talking of a situation whereby we may have up to 200 people that is already infected.
But I understand the Ministry of Health is putting in measures to contain this, if possible, to address it, because so far it is only one case confirmed of the coronavirus in Nigeria.
It was one case in China, in Australia, in Hong Kong. What is the number in those countries? It's always one case. The point I'm saying to you is that if President Mohamed Buhari has shut down the airspace from flights coming from infected countries like Italy, if he has quarantined every passenger that came in from those infected countries, we would have identified this man in the quarantine zone. We would have seen him in the camp. After 3 or 4 days, this would have manifested. Why did the president find it difficult? Is it that the president is an expert in anything? Is it that he has more sophisticated medical backup plans? Is he more stronger than Russia that shut down the entire border linking them with China? Is he more stronger than America that designated flights to some selected airports? Is he more stronger than the UK and other countries? Is he more stronger than Dubai that has deployed high-tech screening equipment at Dubai Airport? Is he more stronger than China that could be getting their streets 3 times in a day? What is it that President Mohamed Buhari and Nigeria have that is so exclusive that made them to relax and allow these people from infected zones to enter Nigeria thinking that we will detect them?
Some people in Nigeria that I spoke with in the health ministry, in the hospitals, are saying that some protocols were implemented during the Ebola outbreak and it was contained. It never had any significant impact on Nigeria's health. And they are deploying similar strategies to contain this. Don't you think this is a worthy development to protect Nigerians against this disease?
First of all, that is the cock and bull story. The Ebola virus, you are with great respect to the late female doctor, who used her personal capacity and that of the hospital to restrain the Nigerian man from going down to Calabar. If that man had left the premises of that hospital to Calabar, it would have been a different story in Nigeria. And thanks to the good Lord Jonathan administration that deployed every weapon at their disposal. Now, President Mohamed Buhari is not telling you a virus that you saw what he was doing in China, what he was doing in South Korea, what he was doing in different parts of the world. You allow people from those places. Didn't you see even during the Ebola most of those infected countries in Africa were restricted in Nigeria too. So why was it difficult for Buhari to say every passenger from countries that have high cases of infection on arrival in Nigeria will be taken to the biosecurity screening place for 14 days? Why wouldn't he do that? Is it difficult to do? Because we're talking of lives of millions of people. We shouldn't care about the lives of one or two individuals who decide to travel to those places.
Ikenga Imo Uguchinyere is the spokesperson for the Nigerian opposition CUPP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. An investment forum of the African Continental Free Trade Area Policy Network, Ghana and the Diaspora, is scheduled to be held from March 28 to April 4 in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Officials say it is a strategic call for Africans in the diaspora to return home to work alongside their counterpart in an effort to support the implementation of the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement and invest in Africa. To learn more about this forum, the organizer Joyce Williams, owner and managing attorney at Amu Williams Law Firm, joins me live in the studio. How are you, Joyce?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm well, thank you. So what necessitated the decision for you to come up with this forum?
So two things. One of them, going back to the year of return that the president of Ghana declared in 2018, and we saw an influx of visitors going to Ghana. Part of it was a lot of entertainment. So with the Continental Free Trade Area Secretariat being launched in Ghana, Ghana won the bid to host the secretariat. So the AU is looking to launch this secretariat on March 31st. We decided to capitalize on the occasion and bring professionals and investors together to capitalize on opportunities to invest in Ghana and the other African countries. As we know, the Continental Free Trade Area is going to open access to market of people over one trillion people with a very young, vibrant youth age of employment, skills, and labor being available. Particularly, we are looking at the diaspora because we want the diaspora to be partners in this investment and development in this phase of Africa's history. And the reason why we are having this forum is to bring them together with their Ghanaian and other African counterparts to encourage dialogue and look at opportunities to partner with each other, to form joint venture opportunities, and really have a stake in the game.
So let me ask you, how has been the response from people, individuals from here, as well as in Ghana, in regarding this forum? And what about corporations and organizations as well? What has been the interest?
So the response has been overwhelmingly positive. In terms of the Ghana government side, they have given us all the support and necessary infrastructure and tools that we need in order to carry out this program. In terms of the diaspora, we've reached out to almost over 45 to 90 African American executives, talking with them about this program, and the responses that we've been receiving has been very positive. We have tapped into people in the entertainment, football and sports, other sports area field, and all of them has really been positive in terms of wanting to take advantage of this opportunity. One of the questions that we have received and was when they are in Africa to invest, what are the opportunities and how do they actually go about it? So for us to be able to answer that question through the forum, we have three panel sessions that will address those questions, that will really encourage networking and put people together. So we believe that after this forum, and we are in a conversation with the Ghana Investment Promotion Council to make it an annual forum, we believe that this platform will answer a lot of the questions that investors tends to have when they are going to Africa, and in Ghana in particular.
Mm. And let me ask you about the issues of challenges some of these investors face when they go to Africa.
Have you received any assurances from the government that some of these red tapes will be reduced or even removed to ensure the ease of doing business, not only in Ghana, but across Africa?
I think that to answer that, one of the things that I always say that, you know, the difficulty in entering any market is not really particularly unique to Africa. You face all those challenges going around the world trying to do business. So any new entrant into any market poses a bit of a problem. But in terms of going into Africa, and specifically Ghana, the government has provided the Office of Diaspora Affairs, the Ghana Investment Promotion Council, the One District, One Factory, the Ministry of Trade. So all those entities are coming together with us to ensure that they put in place measures to allow these investors and professionals to feel comfortable coming into Ghana and investing in Ghana. And we seek to have the same conversation with other African governments to really take a look at their doing business environment and take measures to improve, to allow the diaspora to come in and be partners in development.
What are the expected outcomes that you seek?
So our expected outcomes is that at the end of the 3 days in Ghana, that people will actually walk away with memorandum of understanding and agreement, with joint ventureship, with tangible projects, bankable projects in their hands. And this is not the end of it. We are also creating a database to put information in that database that will allow participants and those who couldn't participate to still follow up with us. We plan on having regional events throughout the U.S. and also because we are looking more of the diaspora in the North America. So the U.S., the Canada, Mexico, and in the Caribbean as well, to really pull the diaspora into looking at Africa and Ghana specifically as a place of investment.
Well, Joyce, in some instances, forums and symposiums and conferences of such are organized across Africa. Promises are made, lofty ideas are brought up, but the actual thing happening on the continent sometimes doesn't occur. What is uniquely different from this forum?
So for us, what is unique about this forum is even in our preparation and in our planning stages, we obtained projects from the government of Ghana through the Ghana Investment Promotion Council and the One District, One Factory. And we analyzed those projects and looked at how feasible this project can move forward. And that was the point of our conversations. So we have those things that we'll put on the table, and our planning is strategically placed so that the conversation is not about theoretical, but more practical. So, and we are targeting the attendees based on the investment opportunities that are available.
Before we go, what should be the expectations of Ghanaians who will attend this investment forum and the expectations of those in the diaspora who will be going as well?
I think that the expectations should be that be ready to do business, because there will be those opportunities from the Ghana side to find counterparts in the diaspora who can partner with them, who can work with them together. So come with business cards, come with already documents prepared for signatures. You can modify it as you please, but really come and have conversations about when can we get started.
Thank you very much. That was Joyce Williams, the owner and managing attorney at Amu Williams Law Firm. She spoke with me live from the VOA studios right here in Washington, D.C. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You are hearing from The One by Diamond Platnumz. It will be followed by Semi Cozy by Eddie Kenzo. And then Sala Pressure by King Sasha. And then Love Me For Me by Ejatu.
Can never turn the lights. I know you love me and the love is true. And I feel the same way, I can't deny. Baby, on the kuhole, I will die for you. I saw who sent you now.
Vimbele, mbele.
Oh, I know pinga.
Kelelelele.
Empty kuchifanya.
Vigere, vire.
Kwa
sisi ya watoweza. Oh baby,
vimbele mbele
mane tantarira
kelelelele
wanuknuko baby
viere viere
kwa sisi ya watoweza.
And I want them to know, oh yeah, eh, you're the one I love,
one in the north,
eh, the one I want to,
I want them to know,
baby, eh, oh, you're the one I love, eh, the one I want to.
I saw one baby, one for your one baby, drop it down baby, show me a one to see, a little chocolate mama, I saw one baby,
you shake it to it,
drop it down baby.
Check it out.
Show me a one to see. A little kupa mama. Yeah. Benzi ni shere, benzi pia vita. Tugombane patanya siri yetu ya ndani. Eh, aga unafume stare, ni vitu vya kupita. Hasa visi kuchanganya ukanishusha thamani. Ah, benzi langu sicheze kachura iwe dance.
Iwe dance.
Fanya mchepu the rule like matches.
Images.
Oh Marina, moyo wangu mwenzako mi mwepesi.
Mi mwepesi.
Isiche kufu, kwa ma pressure ufungwa iweke. Asa usitishwe naya.
Vimbele mbele.
Oh anapiga.
Kelelelele.
Eti kujifanya.
Viere here.
Kwa sisi ya watoweza. Oh baby.
Vimbele mbele.
Mane tantarira.
Kelelelele.
Mwenoknoko baby.
Viere here.
And I want them to know, oh yeah,
eh, you're the one I love,
one in the north,
eh, the one I want to,
I want them to know,
baby, eh, you're the one I love,
I'm moving as I
love, the one I want to.
I saw one baby, one for your one baby, drop it down baby, show me a one to see. Mama. I saw one baby,
you shake your foot,
drop it down baby,
you shake your foot,
show me a one to see, a little kupa mama, a pencil let you want,
watch,
a moto moto baby,
watch,
lila wanguza,
watch,
a moto moto,
watch,
I say baby white a fire,
watch,
now watch all my wuba,
watch,
a moto moto, moto.
Semi, 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 semi,
Mr. Coker.
If you see, make a claim, I go say how high. As long as you are mine.
else you need. I don't be the pants, I don't be the seed. Allow me make a go, make a fee by tree. Come by you be shade for the family. But what else you want, what else you need. I don't be the plants, I don't be the seed. But allow me make a go, make a fee by tree. Come by you be shade for the family.
Please love me for me, na na na.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter and producer Douglas Impuga, and our engineer for today, Desta Wandira, and we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, wisdom is like fire. People take it from others. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.